The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
What Kim and I thought we would do now, what we'd like to do, is have a conversation between the two of us that you can participate in, perhaps. It seems like you want to. And we just want to discuss or share with you and with one another what going through this process has been like for us and some of the things that we've been dealing with. So basically it's the emphasis is to help normalize the experience that we're all experiencing as we go through this process of change. So some of the things that I would like to ask you about, if I
please.
Can, is in your own practice, did you meet physical challenges as you practiced more and more, and how did those manifest? How did you notice them, and how did you deal with them?
Yes, this is an excellent question. As I alluded to earlier, while we were writing on the flip chart, there are changes in the body that can come about through practice, and some of you have noticed them and even commented on them. I'll maybe back up a little bit because it ties in with something else that came up earlier and say that I began practice because of a health condition that was very painful. And so I had a lot of physical pain when I began my sitting practice, and that was sort of what was driving me. I didn't feel that I had internal resources that were adequate for understanding something that was changing my whole body and so forth. And so for me, there was a real sort of lifesaver feeling to the practice when I started doing it. And a lot of my early practice was about learning to deal with my body. And so not only was there this original illness that I came in sitting with, but then in addition, I found that as I was feeling calmer about that and experiencing some of what was said on this, is that there can be an energy flow and there can be a sense of spaciousness around the feelings in the body. A lot of my early mindfulness was about that. Then in addition, I experience what some people do in practice, not everybody, but some people find that practice initiates a kind of physical releases that happen through the body. And these can come in the form of shaking or feelings of movement, feelings of energy flow. There are a lot of interpretations for these, and there aren't so many given within our own tradition. And maybe it's not important to know a specific system for what's happening, but the practice for us is always to maintain mindfulness and to sit at that edge of being present for things but not grabbing onto them. I think there's so much, the body gives us so many opportunities to meet practice in that way, right? So maybe there's a feeling, and I know that you've experienced much pain in your body also through the course of the time that you're practicing, and there's a sense of, so say pain arises, we know that we want to turn towards that, which is already a radical act. Most people don't turn towards pain, but that's what we're asked to do. And so you turn toward it, but how to be with that without being averse to it. And so as soon as you're averse, you're pushing it away, you're trying to control it. I learned through practice, I could feel my mind riding the pain in a certain way, and it got more and more subtle. Like at first there was just a sort of, I want it not to be there. And then I got over that. I could feel like, okay, I can be mindful of this. But I noticed subtle layers of, I'm being mindful of this in order that it goes away. Like, when are you going to go away? I'm just going to watch you until you go away. Then I saw that. I was like, okay. And then there can be feelings of the pain starting to break up or the energy starting to move. And then there's like, how do you avoid, pushing on it? Oh, great, you're starting to move. Go, go, go. I don't know if these specific experiences are ones that you've had, and you may not, but probably in your practice there are going to be, you know, issues of the body, you know, changing, flowing, different perceptions of the way it is. And these are all displays, in a sense, things that we are to observe and get familiar with so that they're not so dramatic and not so surprising. Oh, the body can feel many different ways. The body can feel completely solid. The body can feel completely fluid. The body can disappear. Can we be okay with that? Can we widen our range of what is okay physically? Because the body is a lot of different things. It may not be what you think it is. Maybe that's what comes to mind initially.
So, yeah. And in the process of experiencing these things, did you, how did you find that you could trust your experience, that you could trust your body, that your body wasn't like the enemy?
Yes. I would say that a lot of kindness. So I learned to start loving myself in ways that I didn't before. And I don't mean like my body is myself, but there just has to be that love, that sense of, I'm going to watch this because I care about it. I'm going to be connected to my experience because of deep compassion for the human experience. It's not that easy to be a human. It's not that easy to have a body. And I found that the trust emerged from these feelings of kindness and compassion. Then my mind was like, okay, I know that you're not going to beat on me. You know, you're not going to beat on the body. You're not going to... Because it's really quite uncomfortable to be averse to your own body, actually. You start to feel that, and you start to feel the difference between softening to it. I mean, it's almost like a child or something, other thing that you're caring for. You know, you would never push away or, you know, strike at something else. Why do we do that with our own body? And more when I found that when I showed up in a way that was open and kind and accepting of what was happening, even if it was unpleasant, then my body felt like it could trust my mind. And there developed this kind of mutual sense of trust between the body and the mind. Would you say that echoes your experience?
It does. And some of the things that I've noticed in my own practice, because I'm a person that is really in my head. If I can figure it out, I'm happy, and the body doesn't have anything to do with that, right? But boy, that's a big mistake. So simple ways that I learned to connect the body-mind flow and begin to become aware of it and respect it is when I'm meditating. I led a group here last night, and we started our meditation, and in the meditation I found myself like I wasn't really falling. It was like I was falling asleep, but I noticed I really wasn't falling asleep. What I was doing was letting the body was relaxing. The mind started to relax and the body let go, and then I saw the connection between the two experiences. And instead of like fighting that sense of whatever, it was like, oh, this is a moment of opening here. So this is, you know, sometimes we jump or something, and it means one thing or it means another thing. Another thing that I'd like to share is that I recently went through a real physical challenge. I had a back issue that really put me in a bad state. And people would ask me, I bet your practice really sustained you through that practice or that period. And the answer was, it did. but not in the way that people were imagining. It wasn't like I was able to use my meditation to make the pain go away. What I was able to do was not suffer because of the pain, but simply to recognize the truth of what I was experiencing, which was hideous level 10 back pain, and not have that be me somehow. And it wasn't like I was trying for it not to be me, but it was just seeing and being with what was physically and not ruminating on it, not turning it into who I was. Therefore, pain didn't equal suffering. It was, I really got it firsthand. And in that way, the practice really did sustain me through it. So the relationship to what was happening was more peaceful and equanimous. Mm. Something like that.
Thank you. Yeah. So let me also ask you, as we're transferring more to talking about the mind and the relationship to things, maybe we can get a little comfortable in meditation with how we think our mind feels. Can it be that the mind itself also undergoes these changes like the body does, and how do we deal with that as part of the process?
Can you say a little bit more about what you're asking me?
Yes. You mentioned at the very beginning that practice changes our very way of perceiving and of relating and other things in our lives. Also, so that's one level of relevance. And also, even on the cushion, it can be that we have a feeling of groundlessness, or things that we used to find reliable, even within our own mind, seem not to make as much sense. Things that we cared about before, we don't care about as much. Things that we didn't care about, we suddenly care about more. That can bring some feelings of disorientation to a person. Is this normal on the path, and how does one approach it?
Yeah. So my personal experience with that is that it is completely normal on the path, and the way that we approach that type of thing is carefully and somehow allowing the process to unfold in a gradual way. Most times when, and now I'm speaking from personal experience, other people have different experiences, but since you asked me, I'm going to share from personal experience. Most insights don't come in big flashes for me. It's not like I'm sitting on the cushion and suddenly I've got the answers to the universe. It's not like that at all. It's more a gradual process, and one where the mind oftentimes rebels against my efforts to lighten its load, or my sense of what it takes in order to lighten the load. And it's through befriending what shows up and meeting it with a genuine sense of curiosity and kindness that things begin to sort of fall into place and make sense for me. So what I notice is that there's a deepening mindfulness involved in the process that I'm going through that is not like I normally think about mindfulness. It's like there's an understanding that comes through brightening mindfulness and meeting experience with a sense of kindness and care and self-care as well. So So I'm skirting around something that I think is important, and I really want to talk to the issue, and that is being able to be comfortable with that feeling, that direct feeling and experience of what it's like when we're in fear and doubt. You see, being able to meet that place where there is discomfort and where the mind defaults to old habits of reacting to that moment. So I find that I'm triggered by something. It brings up a sense of fear or anxiety in me or anger or some other emotion that I can recognize. And I know that I'm anxious, but I'm using all my meditation techniques to make my anxiousness go away rather than to just meet it. And so part of trusting the process is being willing to screw up, being willing to try to meet that place even if I can't. Someone said it very beautifully here earlier today about meeting something and then still being stuck by it. So meeting that place of being stuck is a way that we can cultivate this muscle of kindness and compassion. Does this start to address what you're asking?
It does.
Ask more, please.
Well, I recently heard a definition of faith. It's very hard to define this quality. We've written, 20 words about it and probably doesn't even quite capture all of it. But I heard a definition from a meditator that said, faith is the willingness to open to any experience. And we can feel this in meditation, is that sometimes experiences come up that we're not quite willing to open to, right? Oh, not too much of that one. And that can be skillful in some cases. I'm not saying we should just, throw ourselves open to everything. There's wisdom about what we can meet when. But this seems to speak to what you were talking about, Robert, in that, even if the mind is producing things that we don't recognize or that maybe things we recognize all too well, oh, there's the anxiety again. Or I've experienced things on the path that I don't quite recognize the feeling, actually. And that's even more disorienting because it's like, this is not me. I don't think I've ever felt this. And to be with that and trust that that's also part of what the mind can produce. Because freedom, we're going to go through, to reach freedom, we'll go through a lot of different things.
So the question becomes, when we are at that place, and we just don't know what's next. We just don't know what it means, where we're going. Can we be there and not end up going down the rabbit hole, not end up defaulting to the reactions that put filters between us and that moment, you see? And so what happens is that we begin to identify as that being some threat to our ego, in a way, some threat to us. In a way, we begin to identify with that, and we just back further and further away from the actual experience, which, if I go back to the example I was using, which was just back pain, it wasn't that I was a victim, it wasn't that I was flawed in some way because my back was giving me hell. It was just pain. And that's the mindfulness, seeing what was happening and then meeting it with kindness. But this place of not knowing is the place that triggers everyone, whether you're new practitioners or really experienced practitioners. And this is how the process unfolds for everyone in my experience. Mm-hmm. I don't know that anybody escapes that. Sooner or later, we bump into that place that scares the hell out of us. But there was a line in some song that I was listening to on the radio last night, and it said, it was a Leonard Cohen song, and it was something about, you know, it's the crack that lets the light in. There's a crack in everything, and that's how the light gets in. And so, you know, we have to crack through this place of where we just instantly pull back and start to separate and defend and guard ourselves. It's a tender spot.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
We
could ask if anyone has any further thoughts or questions about this before we settle in for another sit.
I really do see a question coming.
Okay.
Maybe it's not a question, but this is my own experience, and I'm sure it's on the path where it's like I'm seeing my hindrances more, and they're like occurring, like they're getting like bigger and bigger and bigger, and like seeing a lot more, and I'm actually getting, sometimes I get more caught in it. And the hindrance, yeah. Even though it's kind of, like, I think I have the same mind like you, rebellious mind. I think I spoke to this with Gil, and he said something that was really refreshing. And actually, made me feel good because I was like, oh, I'm suffering so much right now in the practice. And he was like, oh, that's good. And I was like, yeah, thanks. But I knew what he meant, so he was like, oh, I think. But he says like sometimes to go forward, you need to go backwards. So. Have you experienced that?
To go forward,
going backwards.
I think that's absolutely true, and that brings up another important point, and that is that at a certain stage, you learn to trust yourself. You have to learn to trust yourself because the guilds of the worlds aren't going to be around to walk you through it. And so you have to be willing to make mistakes. You have to come to a place to recognize that within each of you is the teacher. That's where the teacher actually resides. But we're so programmed and habituated to think that we can't trust ourselves, and that we can't trust what's happening to us, that we can't trust our bodies, that we can't trust our minds or our emotions and so on and so forth, that it takes a while to actually get to that place. There's another question in the back.
About the conditioning around that.
I'm sorry.
The conditioning not to trust. Is that family? Is it culture? Is it...
Oh, well... I've heard it's biological, actually. I don't know if you buy this explanation, but, you know, you can imagine the early mammals a long time ago, and the ones, you know, they lived in a dangerous situation out in the world, and something's rustling in the bushes, and the ones who say, oh, I'm sure it's fine, you know, we can just relax and trust that everything will be fine. Maybe they didn't pass their genes on compared to the ones who said, oh my God, let's go, you know. And so it's a little bit humorous, but truly, you know, the sort of protection instinct gets protected genetically. So it's a deep level, in other words, that we're working with, you know, with these feelings of mistrust, although they can come at any level of the mind. I'll throw in an image about the going backwards and going forwards. Someone once said that it's like your elevator only goes to certain floors in your mind. You can't quite see everything yet, and every now and then a new floor becomes available to you and you can go to that one. But when you first open the doors, it hasn't been cleaned for 35 years. And so there's got to be a little cleanup of the new room that you've discovered or the new floor that you've discovered in your mind. And I've had that feeling. It's like something lets go, something opens, and there's the space and the release that goes with that. And then there's the cleanup of all the stuff that's there that hasn't been necessarily incorporated into the whole. How does that fit your experience too?
Please.
One more, yeah. One more.
Kim, I noticed when you were talking about pain, you referred to the body rather than my body. And has that been helpful to you?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I guess I've been through different stages. You know, there's the my body, my pain, you know, it's all about me, which is kind of where the mind starts. And then there's a great relief in realizing that it's really about the body. You know, having a body is what it's like. You know, this is what's possible. And so there can be a sort of a complete, I don't know about complete, but quite complete disidentification with that. And then if you have a mind like mine, which tends toward the wisdom side, there can be almost a disconnection then of seeing everything as not self, impersonal. And at some point, I found that there's been a little bit of a reconciliation, and it's not that it's my body, but it's a unique body. And so there are certain ways of approaching it, ways of tending it that are individual to this one, but it's still not personal. Yeah.
My body is my body. When it gives me hell, I really feel it.
It's not my body when your back's hurting.
Right. It's not. So, if there's not another question, is there? Maybe we can finish our morning with a short sit, and then we'll break for lunch. Okay. Did you have anything?
Okay. So, welcome back from lunch. We're going to start out this afternoon. I know it was probably a kind of a sleepy kind of sit that tends to happen after lunch. And so we thought we'd do some activity to begin the afternoon. And we're going to do an exercise where the aim is to touch in a visceral way to the feeling that Robert alluded to this morning when he said that sometimes what happens in practice is that as things change internally or externally, we can sometimes relate to that as a feeling of loss or of something going. We see the going and not so much the coming or the change or our relationship to that. And so we're going to touch in somewhat viscerally to the experience of change or transition. Do you want to add anything to that setup?
No, I think the exercise itself, some of you might have done this exercise in a different context, and if you have,
that's fine.
It'll be fresh this time, just to enter into it as though this is the first time you've ever done it. So we had a good time yesterday putting post-its on Anna, does everyone have something to write with? So you'll see that there are categories of things here. So in terms of the transitions that sometimes occur in our practice as we begin to notice things shifting and changing, we begin to sense that there's a kind of loss that can occur. So one of the ways to get into touch with that feeling is to do this particular post-it exercise. So what we're going to do is we're going to ask you to write down on the different categories the four most prized possessions that you have. So it could be, I really like my house, I really love my... So we're going to start with the things. Those would be the possessions. So just give it a little bit of thought and think about the four things that are really special to you that you really like. I love my BMW. I love something like that. Things.
My iPhone.
I love my iPhone. Next, we're going to do the activity one, the pink one. So take a moment and think of four activities that you love to do. I love to swim. I love to hike. I love to read. I love to go out to dinner. Four activities that are really important and meaningful to you. I love to meditate. The roles that you see yourself in. I am a teacher, I am a husband, I am a wife, I am a runner, I am roles. The four roles that are really important to you, that you really identify with and enjoy.
Yeah, they can be roles in your family, in your workplace, or in your community. You know, I'm an IMC volunteer, or a friend, or a programmer.
I'm a software engineer. I'm a horseback rider. I'm a poet. Okay. And then the last category is the blue category, or the blue post-its. And those are people, four people in your life that are really significant and important to you.
Do they have to be alive?
It would help. It's a good question. Do they have to be alive?
It's also important to put specific people, like you might want to put my family or my children, but please put actual names. And I know there's more than four, you know, so, but just pick four specific people.
Of four things or four possessions that are really meaningful to you and important to you. We have four people, four activities that you really enjoy and love to participate in, and then four roles that you see yourself in. Has everyone finished? Does anyone need any more time?
think it's okay to put pets under people too, if you want. Don't put them under possessions, but beings that are important to you.
When you can't think of a person, if you can think of a pet, it's just as good. And then when everyone is done, it's for this exercise, it works well if we're in a circle. So if you could come and you could bring chairs if you like, but let's sort of be in a circle. Sure. Again. So I want you to look at your sheets, and these sheets are just for you, so just respect your neighbor's privacy and just look at these sheets. And these are things that you decided at some level were special to you, were important to you in some way. And as we go through life, things come into our lives and go out of our lives. So there's a sense of change and loss. So with that in mind, this is how we're entering into this process. So the instruction here is to look at your sheets and to choose one from each category that you remove. You lose one from each category. So you get to choose whichever one you want.
The easiest one to remove, basically?
You remove one from each category. It's whatever one you want to remove. You get to choose. That's what it's about. You get to choose. There are times in life when we get to choose, and this is one of those times. And then you can put them aside. And then there are times in life when we don't get to choose. And when that happens, that's part of the process. So The next step is that I will go around as the Lord of loss in a completely impersonal way, and I will choose for one from each category. Okay? So you're not really, I really do want to say here, you're not really losing anything. I'm going to give it back to you at the end. I did this exercise once and some woman hated me for 6 months afterwards. Complained to the center that I... So I will give it back to you afterwards, but just doing the first one, because I entered into it with you, was already a sense of loss for me. So it's to get in touch with what it feels like as we go through this process. So I'm going to start on this side, and we're going to go clockwise.